Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Redmen TV podcast. Podcast number 8.
Whoop.
Whoop, whoop, indeed.
Me and Chris. Double whoop. I've grown as a person.
Well, in this particular area of your life.
I feel it deserves a whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop. In the whoop area of life. So we've got a question to kick us off this week from Nikhail Arumugum. Who I get wrong almost every other week. They ask us what our favourite ever Liverpool kit is.
I think away kit, it's the green and white squares, probably. Love that kit.
It's iconic. That is up there with my least favourite kit of all time. Yeah. I've got it. It's actually funny if it's upstairs.
Or the grey flecked 1989 one, because that's what I remember more than the 88
the
one.
The 89-90
one. Yeah, rather than the year before, which was just similar, but it was the candy one, because I had the candy one as opposed to the crown paint one.
That was the year before that. So there was 2 years of that, which was just solid grey. There's crown paint, then candy. And then, the flecked one was the candy one with 88.
I love that one. And just John Barnes, when short was short,
and very wide as well, I remember them.
I think that was just John Barnes, mate.
Yeah, no, I had those shorts, mate. I had that. So I had number 8 on the back of that shirt, because I had 9 on the home shirt from the year before. I got 8 on that as the weekend. I can't remember. I got 7 on the home shirt. This is, of course, pre-squad numbers days. So 9 was obviously Rush.
Yeah.
8 was Houghton.
7
was Beardsley.
Oh, Beardsley at the time. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting. I always tend to go for away kits rather than the home, because red doesn't suit fellas. Just doesn't suit fellas very well. You know, everyone, black and blues and greys are sound. But they just don't really stand out, the red kits. Mm. I mean, any kit that you win a league title in stands out. Yeah. Any kit that you do well in, the grey 2009, the Torres one, that they all stand out. But it's because you attach the memories of that season with those kits, don't you? That's what a good kit does. Exactly. At the time, you can look at it and go, that's terrible.
Well, that's probably one of the reasons why I don't like the quarters kit, is because we lost the FA Cup final in that kit, no less.
But it was a great kit.
For me, it's, any of the grey ones. So, the one most recently, of course, was 08-09. That one, I absolutely adored that shirt. But it's probably, and funnily, if it's the one I got it for Christmas off my mum and dad, 93-94, which is white with the green sleeves, the big black Adidas stripes up the side, black shorts, and then the socks with the white hoops on them. And there's a couple of reasons. A, because Robbie Fowler wore it and he was amazing around that time when he was just starting to break through, but also on the footy games. Sensible soccer at the time, very limited in what you could make your player look like, because it was like 8 pixels, but you could do that. Different colour sleeves and the different colour front. So it was an interesting looking kit that you could relatively accurately make on the game. So
I can tell you, I'm going to throw this in there as a bonus answer. The worst kit that Liverpool have ever had is the Minecraft white, purple and black one. Do you know the one with all that crap running all over the front?
From the first one.
My word, that's the worst.
Second one issue. That's
the worst. It is.
You're probably right. Yeah, it's up there. To be fair, we had 2 terrible purple kits back to back, didn't we? We had the one with the tribal shit down the arms as well. Ah, warrior.
Great days.
Yeah, so thanks very much for joining us on the podcast this week. For those of you who want to watch us do this and get some extra bonus content, we normally answer a few more of your questions at the end. That's on the redmentv.com, so go across and sign up for that. Because, what we do is a very visual medium, Redmen TV. You know, I think we do our best to deliver. Exactly. Look, you've got no idea the hand gestures we're making now if you're just listening. oh, visual gags. Yeah, as I say, go over to redmentv.com and sign up. It's free for the first month. If you watch this and you're totally underwhelmed by the extra visual content, you can't continue to listen to this for nothing. But yeah, that's for you right there. Those finger symbols right down the lens. Okay, so let's get stuck into it. Obviously, we're doing this a little bit later this week. I was down in London recording my take on the Fan Mastermind series. I'll be out in a week or two's time, so tune in for that on the Ball Street YouTube channel. It's definitely worth. I made a complete knobhead of myself, and then redeemed myself a little bit. But yeah, so I don't want to talk too much about Stoke because it's kind of done. But I know you guys did the Final Word show. How was that?
Really, really enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's the manner of victory, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And the fact that you can go from one extreme to another, and that's what makes football so good, isn't it? It's those emotions. It's the emotional roller coaster. It's why 2005, apart from the fact that we win the Champions League off the back of that game against Milan, it stands out more than the others because of the adversity that the team goes to. And to play that badly, that first half was as bad as any I've seen in maybe 3 or 4 years. Yeah. I mean, going back to the Hodgson reign, it was that bad of a first half. And then, you know, coming off the back of indecisiveness with substitutions on the Wednesday before against Bournemouth to show the decisiveness and change the game and bring on a guy who could have fallen down a crack in Phil Coutinho. He'd lost that much weight.
Yeah.
You know, one of the Liverpool players said if it was windy, he'd have got blown over. He'd lost that much weight, do you know what I mean? That and to show that decisiveness and to show the fans that this means everything, that the top four is everything that we're aiming for, that we're willing to push Phil Coutinho past his frigging limits for that. And then to and go and get the result. And that he's willing. Yeah, exactly. And then to go and get the result. It makes that game one of the best of the season for me, just in terms of the emotional rollercoaster.
Absolutely. What's really interesting, because I was looking at the numbers that obviously that we've done in terms of the videos and what have you. And it's weird. And it tells you how important that win was, because you're right. The first 45 minutes of that game was horrendous. Like, with one or two little bright spots where we looked like a football team, but they were so few and far between. And, you know, but ultimately, it's a 2-1 win away at Stoke. It shouldn't be that big, but it felt big because, again, the numbers we did decent numbers on the Merseyside Derby stuff in terms of views. The Bournemouth stuff did absolutely fuck all.
Draws, man.
I know, but then, well, midweek, late night draws. But just what I mean, I'm kind of discounting that to some extent. We beat Everton in the Merseyside Derby really well, 3-1. Nice goals, good afternoon, great football. We, by all accounts, like almost we looked out, we scraped through against Stoke, and yet that has gone mad. It's gone everywhere. People want to look about it. They want to talk about it.
Thank you, Harry Potter.
Yeah, the Harry Potter's got a few big thank you to him and his weird beard.
Did he do that just for the game day, do you reckon?
Yeah. So I was talking to Elliot from Burpit TV about him, and He's just a normal bloke. I think he just washes that out of his beard when he's in day-to-day life.
That's a little disappointing.
But apparently,
Did he just change his name back to John or whatever it is, Michael?
More than like, I mean, unless his first name is in fact Harry, which is a lot of foresight from
his
parents.
And his surname was Potter.
Yeah, exactly. But he, one thing I did find out is the shirt that he wears, because I noticed it's got loads of signatures on it. It must have like every Stoke player from God knows how long on it. He doesn't wash that shirt.
Okay.
Because you couldn't wash that shirt. If you recall, you once upon a time had Robbie Fowler's name on a Liverpool shirt.
Yeah, it's gutting that, because he came into Subway before we were playing Bolton away. So I knew he wasn't in the match day squad. Broke that news to me six friends. Didn't have social media at the time.
They were all
made up to hear that Robbie Fowler was eating a foot long before a match. One that we went on to lose, I think, 1-0. So he comes into Subway and I'm like, I'm in my Subway uniform, I've got the shit hat on and the shit shirt and all that, and trousers that are really too tight. Run into the back, get me Robbie Fowler's shirt, he signs it, I'm like, this is brilliant. But then I realised that I couldn't go to watch the match in the pub in my Subway uniform, so I have to put the Robbie Fowler thing on. Anyway, I end up sweating the signature out, having to wash it and stuff. And mainly, like, look, I could probably have lived with an unwashed Liverpool shirt with a Robbie Fowler signature, but anyone who's ever walked past the Subway knows that the smell's fucking horrendous and that it will literally get into every pore of your skin, never mind your clothes. So I had to wash that shirt regardless because it stunk of Subway.
If Subway smells fucking horrendous, what is it like a fishmonger's smell?
Oh my, Paul. So I used to run a fish counter as well in the supermarket. And for some for some fucking ridiculous reason, they used to give you a fleece. Now, fleeces, if you've ever worn a fleece, and everybody's worn
very
a fleece,
porous.
It's the worst possible thing that you can wear if you're working around water and fish.
A smell sponge.
Honestly, you couldn't even wear a smell sponge. Thankfully, that would be really bad. But I'm just like, I put it on, I stink. I put it on in the morning, I stink. You have to essentially wash and dry a fleece every day. You only get one. Summerfield Market fresh fleece. There's not that many out there, do you know what I mean? They're probably collector's items now, but they all stink of fish, so no one wants them. This is the problem, Paul.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Who gives a man... And to be fair, like, my girlfriend at the time, I was cheating on her. I just stunk of fish all the time.
I'm not going to pick up on that, thanks very much. But yeah, apparently he wears it for every match as he does, and I got told he did a fun run the next day in it as well. And then I had to wear it. I mean, like, dedication to the cause. Apparently he was voted like Stoke City fan of the year or something last year or the year before, and he won some competition to go to the Champions League and the Europa League finals and all that from being the best
fan. You'd be gutted, wouldn't you? I mean, they can't even get to any finals, never mind them.
Yeah, but he was all right. But thanks very much for saying stupid things about flares. And like, here's the thing, I'm not a massive fan of the smoke bombs, if I'm perfectly honest. We've done this on things before. I like how they look, and I like the whole, like, the aggressive atmosphere that it gives you, makes the intimidation factor that gives the away end and what have you. But if you've ever had one drop on your toes, they're horrible. Like.
Yeah, so
I don't disagree with him on some points. He made some stupid points a bit further on, which he didn't put on camera, which I won't discuss because I won't drop him in the shit because everyone's got stupid opinions. But the point about the Stoke game, as I say, it was that real feeling that, because I was looking in the first half. Me and Tom went. We had a great day ultimately. But I was looking over at Jürgen in the first half, and I was thinking, this is it. This is the game where we're thinking about why the season's gone wrong, and you're starting to think about the excuses and why did we fall short this season, and then thinking about next season. And I think I get the impression that every Liverpool fan around the world watching that kind of had that, was this, well, what does that mean? And you start to think about how everything's crumbling down, all your hopes and dreams for the new season already. You're already thinking how shit next season's going to be. So
next season's going to be boss, by the way.
Well, exactly, but that's the thing. We can this win allows us to get back to that mentality, whereas if it doesn't, that's...
Here's the thing. Liverpool fans, for some reason, all of us, I'm not pointing anyone out, have talked ourselves up like we're in bad form because of something that happened 2 months ago, because of January and stuff. Yeah. Now, I've pulled up the form table here. We're fifth in the form table. We've got 14 points from the last 18. Mm-hmm. You know, it's 4 wins and 2 draws and no losses in the last six games. From our rivals, Chelsea and Tottenham.
Or just in general?
Tottenham, Leicester, Chelsea, Palace.
Well, there you go.
Man United are below us. Manchester City have pulled 9 points out of 18.
Yeah.
You know, Arsenal, 7 points out of 18.
Yeah.
You know, Manchester United, 12. They're 2 points lower than us. We've talked ourselves into bad form. Yeah. We're not in bad form.
Yeah.
If we could stay around between that third to fifth all season long, you're getting top four.
Yeah.
Now we're in the business end of the season, and we're outperforming the ones who really matter to us.
Yeah.
That's the thing that matters.
Exactly.
And I don't get why we're talking ourselves into bad form.
Yeah. That's the thing, though, isn't it? What it boils down to is we're still in that position where the teams need to go out and perform. And as we've said, it's not this. I don't think that we've talked ourselves into bad form. It's just that it's there. The evidence is there that we struggle against a certain brand of football. We struggle against certain types of teams, and if teams don't want to come and have a game against us, we make harder work of it than we should. And that was the problem with that game, was when you've got no Mane and you've got no Lallana and you've got no Henderson, and you're thinking maybe no Coutinho, and then you turn up to that game and not only is it no Coutinho, it's no Firmino, you're like, oh, what the fuck? And then you build up. We were talking, we go, well, look, this time last year we were playing Ojo and Origi, or Ajo and Sturridge, or Benteke. You know, we were playing a lot of kids in these games, and we were doing okay. So it didn't feel like it was the end of the world, but we looked disjointed, we looked bang average, we looked totally out of our depth in that first half. And what was great about it was the second we brought Coutinho and Firmino on, and then it got even better when Sturridge came on, to be fair.
Yeah.
We looked like a team that should be playing top four. We looked like a team that was playing Champions League, and all the fears we washed away all the fears, which is the most important thing.
In 3 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
Brilliant.
Crazy.
It's sort of, I'm doing the stat show later on this afternoon with John, and what we've looked into, me, Tom and John, is this idea of how Jurgen Klopp's performed over midweek games and the knock-on effects of not just the midweek game, but we're also looking at the Saturday game or the Sunday game afterwards. And I think, you know, we played a big game in Everton, we played Bournemouth and we got a draw. Now we got 7 points out of nine over those three games. Yeah. And we're looking this week at how Jurgen Klopp's done historically for Liverpool since he took over, and also his Dortmund side from 11-12 and 12-13. And we're starting to look at the signings he made between 11-12 and 12-13 to give us an idea of what signings and how many signings we could be looking for this summer to take us from a side that can compete on one front to can compete on more fronts. So tune in if you don't subscribe to RedmanTV.com, please do tune in for this show because it's going to be epic.
It sounds really interesting. I'm glad Stoke's out the way, but I do get the feeling that, because obviously West Brom coming up at the weekend, not the same type of game as such, but obviously, you know, we're coming up against a Tony Pulis side, having just beaten, you know, what was once a Tony Pulis side that still has that. It still has a number of his, you know, it still has his stamp, I think, to some extent on that side, and it's going to be very interesting because I do feel as though. And we've said this, you know, I think everyone gets this. This is not a new thought per se, but we're looking at these run of fixtures, and if we were the finished article, I'd be rubbing my hands with glee over all these and going, go on boys, you know, let loose, go and steamroll them. But a combination of that, the lack of Mane in particular, I think, and then also, as I say, this fact that we've not been great against these type of teams, inverted commas, I suspect that West Brom will follow a similar path. If we win it, we're not going to win it 4-0. We're going to win it. It's going to be another 2-1-er, 3-1-er.
Okay, here's something we touched on briefly on the final word. So actually, is that West Brom aren't going to let us off the hook in the way that Stoke did. And what I mean by that is Stoke could have, you know, taking John Walters off and not bringing Peter Crouch on was a big mistake for me. Mm-hmm. You know, they should have been lumping balls into the box and putting our defenders under pressure. And one of the things that I think it was Steve, maybe it was Ozzy, mentioned was that they thought that we went to three at the back because of the aerial threat, because you get Matip in there as well.
Yeah.
And you sort of try and go, all right, okay, you play three at the back against Burnley, Stoke, so we know that we can maybe match up with you there, but we also throw three big defenders on to counteract that Stoke thing. So I wonder whether if we're still persisting with injuries, are we going to do something similar? Because West Brom are going to come at us like that. It's going to be the long throws. It's going to be long balls, direct balls into the box. The problem is, I just don't think we're suited to three at the back. Mm-hmm. I just don't think these players have played it enough. And Jurgen Klopp's admitted he's not trained it enough.
Yeah.
Either way, for me, you've got to get Lovren and you've got to get Matip back in there because they can deal with an aerial threat.
What I think it maybe does is what we talked about last week was about maximising what you do at the other end of the pitch. And I think that what we did in that first half was we knew we couldn't get 90 out of Phil and Firmino. So we had to try. I thought the game plan was probably to be tight, and maybe, you know, if you go in 1-0 up on a counter attack, which we could, you know, we could have had a penalty for Woodburn, it could have been a different game. I think we played to keep it level in the first half and then unleash what we had in the second. But you look at what we did in the second, and my viewing on it, I've not seen the stats or the position or anything to back it up, but I felt we were able to play Coutinho and Firmino a bit more narrow.
You're spot on. We played that three at the back exactly like Chelsea. You essentially play a square of midfielders, so be it Gini Wijnaldum, Emre Can, and Coutinho and Firmino right up above them, almost the same width apart. And what we managed to do was get Coutinho and Firmino interacting. Because whenever we've not had Mane, that right winger and that left winger don't interact, they don't play together. Firmino and Coutinho are best when they play together. You're spot on, they played much closer together, and then they were able to use Daniel Sturridge when he came on to much more effect. And there was a willingness from Firmino, you know, to get over the top when Sturridge drops deep, and Coutinho exactly the same. Yeah. And we played so much better for just a small shift in formation.
Yeah.
Makes a massive difference. So I think personally we'll be doing something similar to that.
Yeah, that's my...
It could be 4-3-3, but with really narrow and play centrally, because that's what we're good at. That's what we've been good at all season. All our goals that are good come from little interplay down the centre and breaking teams down like that. And if we do that against West Bromwich Albion, we make them play our game and we don't play theirs, we'll smash them.
Yeah, it's very interesting, because like I say, I agree with that. I think that was the most exciting. That's the most exciting for me, and I was looked in a weird way, because if there's one criticism of him, is that when he's on his game, he does the bits and pieces that Suarez did really well. Mm. You know, he puts himself about, he does that false nine thing really well. But that Stoke, what we saw in that Stoke game was the most, it was just a goal. It was a dead Suarez goal, wasn't it? He had that one moment where he couldn't get away with his pace a couple of minutes earlier, and he obviously thought.
I actually thought it was a dead Neil Mellor goal.
Just swing a leg at it, yeah. But he's obviously gone, well, I'm just, he decided that's not working for me. I'm just going to twat it this time. But that's the thing about it. He was, as you said, he was getting into the box. He was trying to get shots off, and it was like, who are you? Instead of being the guy behind the guy, he was like, no, I'm the guy. I'm going to try and make things happen. And that was, I thought that was really exciting as a result. So you're right. We've talked, haven't we, about for a few weeks about what we do with regards to Origi stroke Sturridge, and are we going to change our ways to get the best out of them? I think we have to, and I suspect, like you say, I think this is it. I think this is the backup answer that we've been talking about. And you're right, the question marks remain over the defence. But let's be honest, they remain over the defence, whether we play four at the back or whether we play three at the back, really, don't they?
Yeah.
And as we've said, what Liverpool are best at doing is scoring the goals.
And as evidenced by us being the top scorers in the league.
Absolutely. And if we can continue to do that, then yeah, whatever makes that work the best. And that's the thing, Daniel Sturridge. You know, he doesn't get an assist, he doesn't get a goal.
But he
was able to just be Daniel Sturridge. I'd still like to have seen a bit more energy from him because he still wasn't closing down right and stuff.
No, maybe not, but he was showing a willingness to get into the box as well. I think Coutinho's goal comes from a ball from Emre Can, doesn't it? I'm sure he plays the ball out to Roberto Firmino, runs into the box. Emre Can turns like a lorry, flicks the ball over the top, and Daniel Sturridge is the one trying to get on the end of it. And there was two exactly the same, a little straight ball over the top that he was trying to get on the end of. And that's not what we've seen from Daniel Sturridge either. Yeah. So, you know, promising, really promising second half that was, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm good. We're trying our best to get tickets for it, but it doesn't look very likely because bank holiday weekend.
And that.
That is the, apparently that is the place to be. And also, now I realise it, given we've showcased how amazing the ways that we've probably done ourselves out of a ticket by showing our greatest. I was like, oh, I'd love to go and do that too. It's like, no, us too, please.
I think the tickets are already sold.
But if anyone, but what I mean is it drives interest up, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah, any stray spares long since snapped up. Oh, I wasn't going to go. Who fuck wants to go to West Brom? Oh, that looks dead good. I'll just stick that. Paul Motion's putting.
If you've got anyone who's got any spares for West Brom.
Yeah, actually. It is a serious request. If anyone has any spares or they know of anyone who doesn't want to go, what have you. Or, in fact, if you're going and you wouldn't mind doing a little bit of filming and around the ground for us, please do drop us an email. interact@theredmentv.com. So let's move on, Chris. It's getting the bin time.
Yeah.
Where we pick one thing from Liverpool FC culture to put in the bin. It's not necessarily Liverpool culture on this, is it?
It's just footy in general, isn't it, to be honest? But I think for me right now, we're entering into silly season, and unfortunately the world that we live in, we need to make our content stand out, and that's, you know, the crux of it. And it's clickbait. It is all about the need for clickbait as opposed to, you know, people actually doing it. There's ways and means to do clickbait, like not putting someone's name in a title. Yeah. Really is just taking the mick. Like,
Bundesliga player, link
star, star, playmaker.
Liverpool release. Legend. Liverpool cancel contract of young star. You know who that was?
No.
Brooks Lennon.
Wow.
Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, Brooks.
I read one today from the Mirror, which was Steven Gerrard takes his first steps into management. And you're like, yeah, you could have just said it was the under-18s job. You'd have got a tenth of the clicks, admittedly. Yeah. But, you know, there's ways and means to go about clickbait.
I love, you know what I love most about it, though?
We're doing it as well. Let's not pretend we're not.
No, exactly, yeah.
I hate the fact that we have to.
How many news videos have you done this week? Tell me the titles.
Liverpool could have £200 million to spend. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain to Liverpool, without the question mark. Because the question mark makes a big difference, to be honest with you. And I forget yesterday's one, but... Do we need Sacco back?
That's a reasonable question.
You know, that was a question.
Sacco coming back to Liverpool should have been that. That would have been that. You missed out. You got better than
everybody. Like,
right? He just didn't think of it, did you?
No. We went, to be fair, me and Tom were racking our brains for like a good. Well, I mean, I was. Tom never shouted any options. But he told me he was racking his brain for like 15 minutes.
I'm racking my brain.
The fact that he's just smiling now says that he wasn't.
Yeah, check how many times he updated his Facebook status in that period. Well, now.
Yeah. He knows. Chris wants me to think of a title. I'm not going to.
Yeah, I'm fucking around, fucking asking me to do shit. The thing what I really like is the response to this, though, because I love the way that when something becomes annoying or something shit and something that's so overtly designed to just be shit, is the reaction that happens to that. And it's so whenever, like, because like Uni Lad and Lab Bible and all that, whatever they're all called, I don't really know, they do all this shit, though. They're the fucking worst for all this clickbaiting. And people, if you go on like Facebook and you see them, it's people who post underneath first comment, it's this player.
There's an entire Twitter account that if you follow that Twitter account, they do, that's all they do.
Amazing.
Someone was telling me about it and someone showed me it, and it's literally, they are the first comment and they will just essentially debunk the article for you and just put it in 140 characters.
Yeah, yeah. Shock move for the player's name is this. It's not a real sort. Yeah, brilliant. I love that as a natural reaction stuff. Because you're right, because it's, I mean, I get it. Because, as you say, this is the world that exists now, and things are driven by clicks, and they're driven by follows, and they're driven by ad revenue, which is driven by all of the above. And why would you click on an article if you said Steven Gerrard takes under 18's role? Like, you would, because you might want to find
Liverpool
out a little bit more
would.
About that. Exactly. But you might want to... But yeah, exactly. You it's that extra bit of information that you're getting for free that might be enough, because people do... skim read. People do read the top line, they do read the headlines only. So yeah, it's clever, and I appreciate clickbaiting for what it is in terms of it's a clever way to stand out and to make money off something. But equally, agreed, it absolutely does my tits in on stuff. What's the worst of it is we haven't gone this far yet. The Metro thing about they put single quotation marks around something.
Well, it's not a
quote.
So
it looks like a quote, but it's not really a quote. So it says, again, Liverpool hold talks. Liverpool in talks over such and such. You're like, oh, that's a quote. And then you look at it and go, it's not a quote. It's not a quote. You sly bastards.
It's infuriating.
Yeah, absolutely. So no, I agree. I think that's a very good thing to get in the bin. That is safely in the bin. No questions asked from that. So as ever, we ask you for your questions. We got loads of responses this week, so I apologise for the people. Some great questions that we're just not going to have time to get through them all, but we'll get through as many as we physically can. We'll do a few in here, and then we're going to do a few more exclusively on the website as well. So we get to a point where if you like this stuff and you like having your questions answered, then again, go to theredmentv.com, sign up, and we'll answer a few more questions at the end. I'll tell you what those are as well. So if you feel like you've sent a question and it's not been answered, there's your incentive. So we're going to start off. Chris is frantically writing down his answer to this question.
I'm just seeing the question for the first time.
Mohammed Yassin, M7MDYNA, go ahead. Just top three favourite bands.
I will always qualify this with at the moment.
Right.
Because I find it too difficult to answer that question, because it's all about what you're going through, and you know, if you want to listen to stuff from like your youth. And
Oasis, Beatles, Foo Fighters.
Okay, fair enough. Right now... Oasis, Beatles, Foo Fighters. Yeah, that's a fucking good three bands, to be fair. Like. Right now, for me, it's Lawrence Arms, it's The Hold Steady, and it's probably Foo Fighters as well. You can see I was a little unsure of Foo Fighters.
You crossed Foo Fighters out?
Yeah. Well,
I crossed
the first part of it out. But they're the three bands that I'm listening to most right now. The fourth one would be Jimmy Eat World.
Okay.
I'm heavily back into Jimmy Eat World. Like,
sweet.
There you go.
But in a Desert Island Disc kind of scenario where you were stranded for forever and ever somewhere, and you can only listen to the music of three bands.
Well, the Beatles would be there because they've got the most. Less to get bored of.
True.
And it's fantastic. Right now, Hold Steady will be there.
How many albums have they got?
A fair few.
Really?
Like, yeah, they've got loads of like deluxe editions with like makes them like 40 song albums and all that type of stuff as well. So, and then. Ooh. Ooh. Nirvana.
Ooh, interesting. Okay, cool.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Good answer. Okay, next question then comes from Ben. The print quality on this is horrendous. Goods, 1992. Would you take James Milner at left back next season? If not, then how does he fit into next season's squad?
I'd like an improvement on James Milner at left back next season. Yep. I'm not going to be disappointed if he is the left back next season, as long as we sign someone like a Chilwell or a Sessegnon or someone to back him up and learn from him. But ultimately, he's absolutely fine. You know, we talk about this since the turn of the year. He's had a bit of a struggle, and maybe he's not offered the same stuff going forward as he has done in the early parts of the season. But then, has the whole team played as well? You know, it's easy to single out a left back, but ultimately he's not. The left back doesn't make your football team tick.
No,
and it shouldn't.
Yeah,
quite frankly, from a defensive standpoint, he has players. Every fullback in the league has players who they come up against who get the better of them. That's just the way football is. Yeah. To be honest with you, I think James Milner has more wingers in his pocket than they have success against him. So for me, I'd be absolutely fine. I'd love a top left back. I really would. I just don't, I'm not sure it's going to happen this summer now.
I think this boils down to one of those things where there's a priority list, isn't there? There's probably three, arbitrarily. If I really thought about it, I always end up coming up with seven. But let's say three. There's three players where you've probably got the budget to go and get three top end, 20 million, 30 million plus players. Let's say, fingers crossed. Yeah, and then after that, you've then got a list of. Then you've probably got your. It would be really good if we could sort this. And then eventually, it just boils down to if we've got a shit ton of money and we're able to sort every single problem in one go, then maybe you get down to seventh or whatever. James Milner falls into that. I think it's a reasonably high priority, but it's not that. If we went out and bought, let's say again, an amazing centre forward. An amazing centre-half, and an amazing winger. I could live with James Milner as my fullback next season.
Yeah.
If we didn't buy one of those players and we bought a left-back instead, so we missed out on the centre-half, or we missed out on the great winger or whatever, and we bought a left-back, a boss left-back, I'd be okay with that. But again, it's the excitement factor of all these things. No one's cream in the pants over signing a boss left-back, you know, because Roberto Carlos has long since retired.
Yeah,
so I my concern with him is that I think we've gotten the last great season out of James Milner this year in terms of what physically he's able to deliver on. And given that we're going to have another, hopefully, fingers crossed, even the worst case scenario, maybe another 10 games to play next season if we're good, we'll need someone else capable of doing that. So you're right, if you get a young lad in underneath them, sad. I would like to see James Milner go into the pool, if I'm honest, of the squad.
Okay,
not into the swimming pool. I don't want to sit and watch James Milner, going for a dip. I'd like to see him go back into rotation for when we, as and when we need James Milner, go to be a proper squad player for us, because I do worry that you can get away with stuff for our season, And maybe he'll come on, maybe he'll be a fine wine, maybe we'll get another couple of good seasons out of him because he has got a great engine.
But I think he looks after himself, doesn't he? He'll be better. I think if he is to go into next season, he will be better for having a year, for having played those wingers twice.
Yeah.
It's pretty rough that.
But it goes both ways, doesn't it?
Of course it does, yeah.
If I was an opposition manager, and I think I wonder, you will never know that. There was a surprise factor to James Milner for the first half of the season, and a combination of us not being in great form, maybe him reaching the limit of his fitness, but also again people are coming up against him for the second time in that, and they've got tape footage that they can analyse of how he plays that position just as much. And I would always bank on opposition managers to get the better of guys who are not dead experience in the position, rather than those guys get the better. I think
to a certain degree you're largely right. I think what you can't forget about is that left centre half position has been a struggle all season long. You know, this isn't a James Milner who's played with Dejan Lovren next to him all season, is it? You know, he's had Clavin, he's had Lucas, he's had Dejan Lovren. It's tough for him, you know, how he's playing a new position himself, and he's getting a new partner almost every week.
And he's been asked to play very high up the
exactly,
pitch as
so
well.
it's a struggle. I mean, I you know what, I said it at the beginning, I was kind of ended on this. I think he'll be sound next season.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
If he's forced to play left back, I think he'll be sound.
Are you right? But this is the thing. If we've got someone to rotate with him, that's probably the most likely set of circumstances. The absolute ideal, because here's my thing, is that we need to buy a young left back anyway, because there's clearly not one coming through. And, you know, Moreno's going to be out the door, you would imagine, one way or the other.
Both the Milan's club interested, apparently.
Brilliant. So let them come all day. There'll be another one when he goes to AC and in 2 years' time, everyone's going, look how amazing he is. It's fine, let him be amazing, just give us some doubt. But the only other situation is, if we want, because we definitely need to buy a kid, or a 17, 18, you know, whatever, who can train up and rotate in that position. But if we're saying Milner's not good enough, that means we need to buy two left backs this summer. And that's when you enter into the world of, you need to have a massive pot of money, and we're fixing everything in one go. Whereas
I think that position's for choice on the wish list.
Yeah. Harshal B, what's the best sporting moment you have witnessed other than footy? I figured you'd be better for this one than I.
Oh man, like witnessed live. Because
let's broaden it out.
Okay.
Because let's face it, how many sporting events do you actually watch live?
Not many, mate. Yeah. Not many. Just the kids at the weekend playing the air under. I'm kidding.
Just to clarify, kidding.
One of the best ones was this week. Sergio Garcia winning the Masters was incredible. Stayed up till 1 o'clock in the morning to watch that. Loved the Masters, my favourite golf tournament. It's just boss. Augusta's the best golf course. It creates the best type of matchups towards the end of the day and stuff. So to see Sergio Garcia after, what was it, 74 attempts at a major, to finally get one when he should have years and years ago, was great to see. I think... Man, this is such a hard question.
Okay, Sam. So if I had to pick proper sporting, I'd probably say England winning the Ashes in 2005.
Oh, that was good.
Because we watched a lot of that at the time. You were working in the Chilwell Abbey, and it was always on. We'd go down during the day and have a pint and watch. It was constantly on. And that was the last Ashes that was on terrestrial TV. So everyone watched it. It was everywhere. So when it happened, it was such a massive moment for the country. Whereas the next one, the one where they got absolutely annihilated down under, was on Sky, and of course it was also on in the odd hours in the morning as well. Like, and from then on, I think my interest in cricket pretty much went out the window once with that, because as I say, there was something to be able to being able to watch it. And of course you had all the, obviously it was the peak of Freddie Flintoff and was it the peak of Kev Peterson, but obviously he's gone on to have an incredible career one way or the other.
And the Rugby 2003 World Cup was pretty incredible stuff as well.
I'd have put that there, except I had to work that final, so I fucking hated it. Bad enough being dragged up in the morning to work, even worse when it's rugby, even worse when all your mates are getting bladdered and watching the rugby and celebrating when you've got to work.
And then the only other one for me that comes near the list, it's tainted now, unfortunately, is Bradley Wiggins winning the Tour de France. You know, I think it was 2012 he won it. Like, I watched the Tour de France every year, record the highlights, watch them every single night. Some at the weekends I was watching, before kids, I was watching the races like four
your
and
own
half
kids.
Hours on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, watching him win the Tour de France was amazing, but it's properly tainted now.
The only other one, and it's not a true sporting moment because it's a sports entertainment moment. If we're going to go with Vince's branding, it was the moment where Shane McMahon showed up on WCW Nitro after they bought WCW, and I remember because I used to flick between those two, between Raw and Nitro. Every it used to be on Friday, it was broadcast in England. Obviously, it was Monday live in the States. And seeing that and being like, wow, like the first time it actually properly crossed over was absolutely unbelievable. So yeah, brilliant question though. Okay, Dan Riley, which players from the current squad would have gotten into the team in 2008-2009?
Sadio Mane.
Without a shadow of a doubt. That it? Adam Lallana.
Adam Lallana, yeah.
I think he's an upgrade on Ben Ayoun. I think Mane, if you look at what that team, let's for the sake of argument say that team was Reina, Risa, would have been Risa at the time. No, was it Aurelio at the time? Was Risa gone?
It was Aurelio.
Hippier, Carragher, Finnan?
I think it was
Arbeloa.
Yeah, you're right. God, I covered this team a few weeks ago as well.
Alonso, Mascherano,
Gerrard
in like the 10. It was
Albert Riera left.
What were we saying? Bennett was Ben Ayoun.
I'm not sure about. I thought it was Coutmore on the right. To be honest,
Cout on the right. You're right. Yeah, and then Torres up front. So Mane, swap Mane for Cout.
Coutinho maybe for Riera.
Coutinho for Riera. Oh my word, what a team.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
What though, a team that'd be.
Manuel for Riera.
No. Yeah, I mean, Aurelio was good. He scored a free kick in that game, didn't he? So what, in the Man United game.
Was the same,
wasn't
it?
Yeah.
He scored some good goals.
So in terms of on the bench, additionally on the bench, I'd have Milner instead of De Sena.
Matip.
Same we had Agger.
And Skirtle. And still have Matter.
Okay, that's fine.
And I have Klein in that side, in fact. And I loved Arbeloa.
Arbeloa was great.
I'd still probably have
okay.
Klein.
Okay, interesting. And then midfield, nah, you're all right. Alonso, Mascherano and Gerrard, fine. They're fine, they can stay.
I'd probably bin Lucas off. I'd have the young Lucas. I wouldn't have this Lucas.
You'd have the old Lucas. You'd have the young Lucas. I want middle Lucas. I want Lucas from the game prior to his cruciate knee injury.
Oh, that's nice.
But it's not an option. So, but yeah, no. There's a couple. Without a shadow of a doubt, Mane and Phil Coutinho improved that team straight off the bat. Title. Thanks very much, Man United, in your face.
And I'm just gonna throw Suarez in anyway. I know he's not in this side.
Of course.
I'm just throwing him in.
Kenny, Rushy, Ian Rush on the bench. Brilliant. Okay, Nigel Cody, Irish Red 11. Now, the few people have asked this, and unfortunately for the phrasing of this, I've probably picked the most the most difficultly phrased of the questions.
Is it in English?
Why Oxlade-Chamberlain? No consistency. We could get two better technical players in Europe for that. He wouldn't improve our squad. Discuss. So, basically, a lot of people asking about Oxlade-Chamberlain. We're going to be doing a lot more of this on the Reds News Roundup show this week with Steve. So, if you want to watch that, please do. It's where we have our real transfer and news discussions. It's known. You really like
Oxlade-Chamberlain. I
really like him. I'll be honest, I like him too. And
you weren't sold in December, were you?
No.
Have you seen a bit more of Arsenal since or?
Do you know what it is? It's his pace. He's faster than I thought he was. Because I look at the goal that he scored against us at the start of the season, and it was a great goal. And that you know, somebody who's got the technical ability to do that. That's exactly what we need. And I think that my thing about the Oxlade-Chamberlain stuff is that smacks of Liverpool 2 or 3 years ago, a signing. There's a lad who he's not quite getting his game time. He's British. He's overpriced. and he's badly injury prone. And that's got Liverpool signing written all over it. Now, I will qualify that with, if he's the third of three expensive signings that Liverpool signed this summer, that's a great, I think he's a great addition to the squad. Unfortunately, with the Liverpool from 3 years ago, he's our main signing. We spent £35 million on Oxlade-Chamberlain, and everyone goes, wow, Oxlade-Chamberlain. And then he gets injured 2 weeks into pre-season training, and he plays 18 games in his first season, or whatever. But I like him, and I like him as that. If we're buying two top quality from abroad, other players to go, you know, this summer, and then you've got him who can play left wing, right wing, attacking mid, and if needs be, if you play two holding mid, centre mid as well, then I'd be all over Oxlade-Chamberlain.
I think he's boss, mate. I really do. I just think he's dead good at footy.
As simple as that.
It's just as simple as that. And you can like players, can't you? You know. I wouldn't write anybody off in the Premier League. They're all good footballers, but for me, he's ready to take the step up.
The only issue with him, and this is something we raised on, I don't know what show it was last week, but Liverpool, if we've got money to spend, stop buying players that are injury prone. It's literally, should be our point number one this summer, as far as I'm concerned, is we need guys who can play 50 games a season, because we've got basically none of them in that squad. We've got very limited number of players who don't get injured very often, and so much that's unpredictable, because there's no accounting for Sadio Mane getting his studs caught in the turf and doing his knee ligaments. You can't account for that, but it's all those daft little injuries the players pick up along the way. It's the strains, it's the this and that. We just need more robust footballers.
This is where the scouting department comes in. I was listening to an NFL podcast, I think it was this week anyway, and it was with a guy who's been a scout, and he's ended up as a GM for the Indianapolis Colts. And I will, it is football related, this. I can see you glazing over, Paul, but it really is. It's relevant. NFL just goes. He's talking about NFL again.
Okay.
I thought with him starting a channel, he wouldn't talk to me about it anymore.
Oh, yeah, check out Chris's NFL channel coming soon.
Yeah, coming soon. Check it out when it's, you know, today.
It's got a Twitter and a Facebook.
And the YouTube channel, no less.
Yeah, but no, there's nothing on the YouTube channel, so no point in subscribing to that. But you got
what? Do I go around going unsubscribe to Mates TV?
No, unsubscribe.
Do I go around going don't subscribe to Mates TV? There's no point.
No?
No, I don't. You're right, but that's crucial.
You've got
it goes against everything that I'm trying to say.
There's two Twitter posts on the Twitter. You can look at a cool graphic.
Bangers, though, weren't
they? And one that tells you to go to the Facebook.
Anyway, thank you to the 106 of you that have followed the Twitter account that doesn't tweet. That is really appreciated.
At Cover 2?
At Cover 2 TV.
With the number 2.
Anyway,
the Indianapolis Colts.
Right, so he used to be a scout, and what he said was he fell in. I'm just playing footy now.
I thought you were like, let me finish my point. I thought, right, okay, that's all.
Yeah, Paul's kicking me under the table if you're listening, and yeah, Paul's wife does that at dinner apparently. Yeah, this guy used to be a scout, and he fell in love with scouting. Ended up, I think it was 15 years in the Midwest scouting. That's what he did, and he was talking about it, and he was saying like, your job as a scout, anybody can tell if someone's good at footy or bad at footy. Mm-hmm. All scouts can do that. That's not what they're paid to do. They're paid to find out the nitty gritty about these players, why all those injuries occurred, whether he's really unlucky or whether his body's made of fucking cheese strings or whatever. And this is what the scouting departments have got to be there for.
Yeah.
You know, and you find out about the player's personality, you go and speak to the player's parents. And what he was talking about is, he made this really great signing for the Chicago Bears. I forget the fella's name now. Nobody else wanted him, but he went and sat down and had dinner with his mum and dad without him there, and just had a chat, and he spent a couple of days with them and all this, and he found out that the type of people that they were, and he knew what type of a person his son would be, and they signed this guy, and everyone said he's a misfit, he's not going to work, and he ends up being one of the best players the Chicago Bears ever signed, because he got to know the people behind him, and he surrounds himself with, and this is what scouts have got to do. It's not just, oh, he can kick the ball, of course he can take a free kick, he's fast and all that. It's delving into that injury history and wondering why all these are happening, and whether if he comes to Liverpool, whether that stuff's going to happen.
If
Liverpool sign Oxlade Chamberlain, then I think that they will have vetted that injury history better than we can.
Yeah, sure. But again,
but you've got to look into it. You're right.
No. What I mean is, we've got a poor track record enough to suggest that they don't get that.
And then you've got to get better scouts, which has happened.
But it's something that Alex Ferguson was amazing at, wasn't he? You know, he basically look at the parents and look how they filled out and all that kind of stuff and say, well, look, if your dad hits his 30s and then went, then there's a good chance you'll probably end up with exactly the same. Well, exactly. Yeah. That, I think that's a
lot. Is that why he was trying to sell him when he was 28?
Exactly. That's why he felt he had a limited lifespan at Man United, and you know, for whatever reason. But you know, obviously Jordan Henderson's gait and all that kind of stuff. He was a big student on that kind of stuff. But I don't know enough about the injuries that Oxlade-Chamberlain's had to be able to say would, because if it's just one of them, because here's the thing, and you're right, it's a level of scouting that we'll never be able to truly comprehend, because you can look at a guy and go, well, he doesn't have as many injuries, but you say, well, it's because he's not as intense a footballer. He doesn't get injuries because he doesn't get in positions when he gets kicked. You know, he doesn't run as hard as other guys. So it must be borderline impossible. But I think there's a simple rule of thumb, if I'm honest, is that look at the injury record that they've had at this point. If they've not had a spate of injuries, they're less likely to continue to have a spate of injuries. Whereas that's the thing, Oxlade-Chamberlain for me, if he's either going to end up on us or Newcastle. You know, this is the thing. He'll be, look at what Rafa's doing at Newcastle. He's finding these type of guys.
He's an Andros Townsend type of a player.
Yeah.
I know what you're getting, and I don't disagree at all. I'm just saying, I think, you know, Liverpool scouting department, if they do go in for him, will have quelled those concerns, if not for want of a better
word. Well, hopefully, but the thing is, hopefully, it's what we've discussed this, it's the property market thing, isn't it? Is that because of the way we've had to conduct business, we've had to gamble on people, and that's where I don't know. Hopefully this summer, we won't have to gamble on this, because what you're saying is right, is that hopefully if we're buying him this summer, it's because we know his injury things aren't a problem, whereas I think we've gambled on people's injury problems in the past, because that's why they're £10 million cheaper, or that's why they're more
and again it kind of goes back to what we said a few weeks ago, is sometimes you just got to forget the past, because it's a completely different set of people who are running this club now. And you know, Jürgen Klopp, I think, has got credit in the bank after the last transfer window that he spent money in, and as such, if he decides to go for a player, you know, we can fume all we want about it, but look at Gini Wijnaldum, look at Sadio Mane, and look at the big two fingers that Klopp stuck up at us with those signings. You know, he put his neck on the line there. Mm-hmm. Liverpool fans didn't want those players, or they thought they were overpriced and we're not going to get value out of them. Look what they've done.
Yeah,
just look what they've done.
100%. Completely agree on that. okay, one more question this week, and it comes from Alec P. Oh, actually, no, I'll tell you two more questions. The first one comes from Peter McPartland at PED7, who asks, where was Tom on Sunday between the hours of 10 p.m. and 1 a.m? So, if anyone's seen this, obviously the video, everyone's seen it, the video doing the rounds of Ross Barkley getting sparked out in town. If you look at the still image, the free frame, the man who sparked him out, Tom, it's you.
Right, Tom, you need to come round here and answer this question, or do you want me to just say Rocket League?
I was probably working.
I'm not sure on Sunday
between 10 p.m. and 1. I'm not sure we're going to be your alibi on this, Tom.
I'm not sure that's correct.
Did you have a 3-hour porn session or something? Why won't you tell us where you were?
He's somewhere.
He was playing Rocket League with his Rocket League pals online.
Probably playing Rocket League.
So Tom was not the man who sparked out Ross Barkley.
To be fair, we've seen Tom on the football field. Now, I've never seen Tom throw a dig, but I've seen him shoulder barge. And if Ross Barkley took a dig off a guy who can shoulder barge like Tom, Ross Barkley wasn't getting up.
Not getting up at all. Now, I do know a lad who once sparked Danny Cadamartoli, but that's a different story for a different day. And most people listening won't give a shit about Danny Cadamartoli anyway. And the last question of the day comes from Alec P, as mentioned. Do you guys expect Liverpool to break their transfer record more than once this season? I think we will almost undoubtedly break it this summer.
Yeah, not this season though. It's shut. Yeah. Transfer window and that.
Yeah. April. Spring, as you know, it'll be summer, won't it? Yeah, no chance. When does summer start?
I don't know, mate. There's probably Google it.
Yeah. August. Maybe.
Something about swallows.
July.
I don't know.
Listen, careful. to not be a facetious about Alex's question, I think that Liverpool will break their transfer record at least once definitely. I don't know, more than that.
I think once is a definite, yeah. I would be surprised if it was two, but I'd be made up equally. Aubrey had this. I think he put a bet on it. I'm sure I'll get a long-winded WhatsApp telling me that I'm wrong, if I'm wrong. He put a bet on saying every team in the Premier League would break their transfer record last summer, and there were only three or four that never.
Wow. Cool.
That's quite interesting.
It's pretty interesting.
Reasonably interesting.
It's interesting.
Cool. I'm glad I brought it up.
Good. It depends, because I wouldn't. Yeah. If it's 40 million, and then we buy, and then the next player is like 37 million, then we've not done it twice.
What if he's?
But if we buy a 37 million pound, then a 40 million.
What if it's 40 million and then 40 million?
Then no. It's not breaking it again, is it?
Slide that, isn't it?
Well, that's the point I'm making. It's the same point. You've just done it slightly better. Close together.
Yeah, you're right.
No worse.
Better.
Why?
Because it's ambiguous.
Okay. Absolutely. Sure. Yeah, but that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah, what I mean is, I would...
With inflation?
We are more... Shut up. We are more likely... to break £35 million, which is our existing transfer record, more than once. We're more likely to buy two more priced over £35 million players this summer than we are to break our transfer record twice, just because odds are...
I think you're right. I think we can possibly spend more than £35 million twice. You're right, it's the order. It's what matters, exactly. Isn't it?
That's it. We're being dead facetious on this question, aren't we? Sorry, Alec, it is a good question, by the way. But yeah, I would expect us to buy...
I'd just fed up with Andy Carroll being our transfer records, to be honest.
Yeah, 100%.
Proper fed up. I'd have paid an extra million and a half of money.
Yeah, absolutely. I would expect us to buy a couple of £35 million plus rated players this summer. I don't think that's that. We're not that far off it, really, are we? When you consider that we paid 20 odd for, which was it, 22 or whatever for Wijnaldum, and the best part of 35 for Mane. So yeah, I think that's a very realistic thing to see from Liverpool this summer. Anyway, yes, we
do, you know, do what this, though, what? All the FSG out will be like, if we've spent, hang on,
careful how you phrase,
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I'm trying to phrase it in
there's
my head
blood,
first.
There's blood and piss boiling.
It's not the FSG out campaign. I'm not bothered about them. They can do what they want. I'm on the fence still. That's fine. Now, if I was FSG and I wanted to please the FSG out people, I would probably do it in the reverse order. So I go 36-40, because then your little
Liverpool break transfer record twice.
Exactly.
PR, good PR, that Liverpool Football Club. His paycheck. I'd say he's available, but he's not. He's overweight.
No, he is. He's available for you. I'll fuck Paul off.
Careful again. You nearly stumbled there. Those days are gone.
Long gone, mate. When you had the long. What?
You're right. That's it. There's a big opportunity. I think there'll be a big PR push this summer. I don't think they'll care. People will hate. Haters are gonna hate, aren't they, Chris?
Is that a pop song? You just quoted.
Haters gonna hate. Yeah, it's
Taylor Swift.
Ah, you see, you knew it. I knew it too. That's a belter of a tune. I'm sorry.
It's a banger. Robin was playing musical bumps with me to that.
It's an absolute belter. Unfortunately,
I've been trying to get Kat to play years, but no.
She's a snide dickhead.
My daughter. Taylor. Sounds
taking a song off Spotify. I'm sorry, I'm not buying you. People are only allowed to call their own kids snide dickheads, aren't they? It's a very territorial thing. We've got some more questions we're going to be answering in a moment. So if you're watching on the redmentv.com, stay tuned. We're going to be answering wrestling alliances, because, you know, I like a good wrestling question. Favourite ever non-football game? And if there was one match in Liverpool's history you would change the result of, which would it be? Answering those in a moment. Now, we meant to do this at the start of the podcast. If you do like the podcast, please do rate it. Give it 5 stars. Go for it. Why fuck about? And leave a review as well, and obviously download and tell people all about it, and That would be absolutely groovy.
Mm.
You happy with that?
Oh, I'm made up with that. We should have done that at the beginning of the podcast.
Like, what are we going to do? We're going to do it at the start of the podcast. Are we bollocks? We're going to wait till the end when we remember.
And no one's listening.
If you really, if you're still listening, it means you really like it. And if you really like it, you've not done it.
The show's basically ended.
Then go and do
it. See you later.
Yeah.
Go away.
Go and do it. Go and do it right now.
Go away.
No. On, if you're on, I mean,
mixed messages, Paul.
No. I feel like we need to get on message.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just go and do it right.
Like that's going to stop sound.
Visual gag. I don't think you understand how sound works.
It's not going to stop it.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're watching on the RedmenTV.com, we're about to get stuck into it. Thanks very much for listening, and walk on the rest of yous.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.